So superheroes are great. Superheroes are fun to think about. And I asked about that today because we are going to talk about a guy that kind of seems like a biblical superhero, and that is Samson. Samson and Delilah is the story we're going to focus on today, with the focus really being on Samson himself. We are in our summer series called The Library, where we are looking at Old Testament stories each week and then seeing kind of what the lessons are from that story that we can still think about today. And today will be Samson. So Samson is a guy that is given these amazing gifts, primarily of strength by God, superhero-style strength. But he is also this incredibly flawed guy who has a lot of faults and kind of screws up. He in essence, he can't get out of his own way. Yet in the end of the story, God is still making a way for Samson. That's what I want us to think about for ourselves as we go through this today, that God makes a way even when we lose our own way. God makes a way even when we lose our own way. So before we dive into Samson and Delilah, I'm going to give a really quick backdrop on Samson himself, coming from Judges chapters 13 and 15. Samson was promised as a child to a woman who was barren and couldn't have children. God promised her a woman. God promised this woman a son, and it was going to be Samson, who was born a Nazarite, which a Nazarite is someone who is dedicated to special service and dedication to God. This is laid out in Numbers 6. It means they cannot have any wine, no food from a grapevine, cannot be near a dead body or corpse, and as famously for Samson, they cannot cut their hair during this time of devotion. Okay, so throughout Samson's life, he is shown this amazing God-given strength. At one point, he wrestles a lion and kills it, and he's fought off thousands of people. But he's also broken some of this Nazarite vow. He's also come into an incredibly bitter feud with the Philistines. Okay, so we have our guy Samson, incredible strength and gifting from God, but he's broken some of his vow, and he's in a feud with the Philistines, okay? He's also got an incredible weakness for women, for the ladies, and that's how we kind of get to Samson and Delilah here. We're going to be in Judges chapter 16. We are going to start with verse 4. It's marked in your Bibles. It'll also be up here to follow along. So we're going to start Judges 16, verses 4 through 9. It says this: "Sometime later, he, Samson, fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek whose name was Delilah. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, 'See if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength, how we can overcome him so we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver.' So Delilah said to Samson, 'Tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and subdued.' Samson answered her, 'If anyone ties me with 7 fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, I'll become as weak as any other man.' Then the rulers of the Philistines brought her 7 fresh bowstrings that had not been tried, and she tied him with them. With the men hidden in the other room, she called him, 'Samson, the Philistines are upon you.' But he snapped the bowstrings as easily as a piece of string snaps when it comes close to a flame. So the secret of his strength was not discovered." All right, so Samson falls in love with Delilah. Again, love, lust, I don't know. Samson really liked women. So he falls in love with Delilah. She's a Philistine woman, most likely. And the rulers of the Philistines approach Delilah and say, "Get the secret to his strength, and we're going to pay you. We're going to pay you a lot. This 1,100 shekels a piece to her would probably be more money than she could ever imagine." And hear that it's the rulers of the Philistines coming to her. They see Samson as that big of a threat, that big of an issue, that the rulers are going to her saying, "Hey, we need something done. Help us out." So starts off, Delilah just asks Samson, "What's the secret?" Right? Should be honest with your significant other, so she just asks. And he says, 7 fresh bowstrings that haven't been dried. So the Philistines bring these to her. She ties them up, yells, "The Philistines are on you," and he snaps the strings like nothing. Try one didn't work, but she's going to try again. Next 3 verses, Judges 16, 10 through 12. "Then Delilah said to Samson, 'You have made a fool of me. You lied to me. Come, now tell me how you can be tied.' He said, 'If anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, I'll become as weak as any other man.' So Delilah took new ropes, tied him with them. Then, with the men hidden in the room, she called to him, 'Samson, the Philistines are upon you.' But he snapped the ropes off his arms as if they were threads." So Delilah goes, "You lied to me. You made a fool of me. How could you do this? You got to tell me the truth this time." So he tells her new ropes that have never been used before. Here's the thing. Back in Judges 15, he has snapped a bunch of ropes. I'm not sure how they think regular old ropes are going to subdue this guy, but they try. I guess we can admire the persistence, maybe, but try number 2 fails as well. But again, they're persistent, so here we go again. Try 3, Judges 16, 13, and 14 this time. Delilah then said to Samson, "All this time you've been making a fool of me and lying to me. Tell me how you can be tied." He replied, "If you weave the 7 braids of my head into the fabric on the loom and tighten it with the pin, I'll become as weak as any other man." So while he was sleeping, Delilah took the 7 braids on his head, wove them into the fabric, and tightened it with the pin. Again, she called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep and pulled the pin and the loom with the fabric. So Delilah's even more upset. She's like, "You're making a mockery of me," right? She's playing a part to him, but she's selling it. She's like, "You're doing this to me. How can you do it?" So Samson slips a little bit here. He says, "Weave the 7 braids of my hair into the fabric of the loom and tighten it with the pin." Now, it seems weird, but he gives her something to do with his hair. Why even go there? Well, it doesn't work. Okay, as we see, it doesn't work. But throughout these first few attempts, we see a few things. Delilah is cold and calculated. She knows what she's after, and she keeps going and going. What I got to wonder is, how doesn't Samson see it, that she's really serious trying to get this secret? It's almost like he plays along for fun. He messes with her. He enjoys it. He's arrogant about it. And arrogance is always an issue. We're going to see why. Judges 16, 15 through 22. "Then she said to him, 'How can you say I love you when you won't confide in me? This is the third time you've made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength.' With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was sick to death of it." So he told her everything. "No razor has ever been used on my head," he said, "because I have been a Nazarite dedicated to God from my mother's womb. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become as weak as any other man." When Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the ruler of the Philistines, "Come back once more. He has told me everything." So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands. After putting him to sleep on her lap, she called for someone to shave off the 7 braids of his hair, and so began to subdue him. And his strength left him. Then she called, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep and thought, "I'll go out as before and shake myself free." But he did not know the Lord had left him. Then the Philistines seized him, gouged out his eyes, took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles, they set him to grinding grain in the prison. But the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. So Delilah levels up a little bit more in this last attempt. "How can you say you love me if you won't even tell me the truth?" She keeps going and pushing him and pushing him, whether it's for the money or her own pride or whatever. She just keeps going, and finally Samson can't take it anymore, and he tells her. Maybe he doesn't think much of it, but he tells her the secret of his hair. So Delilah gets the guys to come back, and it says she puts him to sleep on her lap, right? Just a nice young couple in love, having a little snuggle, except not at all, because she has his braids cut, and it says his strength left him. That set-apart nature and dedication to God, that connection to God has been broken. And she wakes him up, and this time he can't get away. He's captured, and his eyes are gouged out. Loss of eyesight or being blind is seen as a terrible curse for the Jews. And then he is sent to work in a prison grinding grain. He's probably grinding by hand instead of with use of a horse. Also, the grinding of grain was typically a task given to the women. So it's humiliating for him. This big, strong, champion, superhero of a guy is humiliated. He brought so much of it on himself. He lost his way, and his sin led to his weakness. And those two things, losing his way and sin leading to weakness, are two things I want to look at us today. So losing our way is the first part. A couple weeks ago, I had some family in town. My brother and his family, my sister and her family were here. And we have kids all roughly the same age. And it was cool. We were in the backyard, and they started to play soccer together in the back. We're watching them. Then all of a sudden, the adults kind of turn, and we see these little baby bunnies running across the yard. We're like, "Oh, guys, get away, get away. We don't want to, you know, hurt them or anything." And we look, and somehow we had uncovered a little burrow they had made in the ground, and the bunnies had gone away, and they're trying to get back, right? They're trying to get back to it, make their way back, but they lost their way. They're looking around, trying to. And they scattered because they were scared or thought they were threatened, but they were trying to get back. You could see them looking around, but they had realized they had lost their way back. Whether it's through fear, our own missteps, our own pride or whatever, many of us have lost our way at times as followers of Jesus. And I want to talk about a few ways that this can happen to us. So we can lose our way, first off, when we forget how we are made. Samson was born a Nazarite, devoted to God, ready to serve God. We were made to worship God, to be worshipers of God. Romans 12, 1 says, "Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship." Worship, doing things for the honor and glory of God. We lose our way when we aren't focused on our worship of God. Now, We don't lose our way if we aren't walking around and walking through the grocery store singing Jesus loves me all the time. That's not how it works. But we do lose our way if we're walking through life and the songs of God aren't at our core, that they're not what's driving us, what's guiding us. Then we forget that we're made by God. We forget that we're made by a God who loves us, so we withhold love from others. We don't serve. We don't show kindness and not offer grace. We forget that we're made by God's design. So we try to change based on someone else's design for us, the way we dress, the way we talk, all these things that will honor someone and please someone other than God. We are made in God's image, not someone else's. We lose our way when we forget that. When we change for someone else in a way that doesn't honor God, our worship is no longer focused and devoted to God. So we lose our way when we forget how we're made. We also lose our way when we use our gifts selfishly. Samson used his strength for himself at times. He was arrogant about it. Now, in some way, God has gifted all of us with something. And if you're here being like, I don't know that God's gifted me, or I don't know what it is, and you're figuring it out, that's an okay place to be. Keep working with God on that. But all of us, in some way, have a gifting from God. Using them selfishly, though, is when we use them in a way that is not for God or that wouldn't please God. Now, in some way, your gifts, as you're using them for God, will benefit you and will be good for you, too. That's great. That's not being selfish. But I'm talking about holding them only for yourself and withholding them from God. I believe some of my musical ability is a gifting from God. If I refuse to ever use that to connect with other Christians or to play worship or something like that, that would be withholding it and only using it selfishly. So remember where our gifts come from and use them selflessly for God and not selfishly for our own gain. We also lose our way when we're guided by pleasure, not purpose. So Samson's purpose was to serve God. He was often guided by the pleasure he got from women, sensual and sexual. He had been married at one point. He then visits a prostitute at the beginning of Judges 16, all before Delilah. So we may struggle and lose our way in that same way. We may be guided or drawn to something in a sensual or sexual way, which can lead to lust, to porn, to impurity, lying, affairs, hurt, all these things that do not honor God. So being guided by physical pleasure can cause us to lose our way. We can also lose our way guided by the pleasure of approval. In general, we like it when other people approve of us or think well of us. And on its own, that's totally fine. But we need to be guided by God's purpose first. If we go about gaining approval in a way that doesn't honor God, by lying, cheating, putting someone else down, or at the expense of someone else, and we've lost our way, the only approval that really matters is God's. So we lose our way when we've been guided by the pleasure of approval and not God's purpose. So it's about what guides us and drives us. When it's pleasure over purpose, we definitely do lose our way. And when we lose our way, it's easy to fall into sin. Losing our way is a type of sin because we're not following God. And that sin leads to weakness. It leads to weakness. I often come up here pretty much every Sunday with my coffee, right? Big coffee drinker. And I like strong, robust coffee. I don't drink weak coffee. I don't put anything in it. But there are those mornings, maybe like this morning, where like, man, I need more coffee, right? I just need more. So what I could do is I could just add some water, right? Right now, I still got more coffee. So here's the issue. It's not the same. I just actually made my coffee weaker. It weakened the flavor. Adding something just made it weaker. God made us with the right proportions. God made us at the right temperature. God made us good in his eyes. God made us a really good cup of coffee. But when we sin, it's like adding more water. It might seem like we're making ourselves better. We're having more fun. But adding the water, sin actually leads to weakness. So what happens when our sin leads to weakness? So when we become weak, we can't see what's going on around us. Samson couldn't see any of the good God was doing. He also couldn't see the danger he got himself in with Delilah. So there's good and bad. We can't see either. The good, God is always moving and working. All God does is good. But when we're caught in sin, we're focused inwardly on ourselves. We're focused on satisfying whatever the sin is. And sin is isolating and has a really narrow focus. When we aren't able to see the big picture and the good God is doing, that's when we're in our sin. We can't see around. We can't see what God is doing or the good we might be able to do with him. Sin separates us from God. It doesn't want us to see what God is doing. Then there's the bad. Sin might make us feel really good in the moment, like chasing that pleasure we talked about earlier. But that feeling good can hurt in the long run because that good feeling goes away and then it takes more of a substance or a pleasure or whatever it is to feel good again. The accolades or the approval are gone, so we go even further to try to get them back. We don't realize the damage we've done to ourselves to make it happen. We often don't see the damage we do to other people to try to make these things happen. We start to see other people as means to an end and relationships as transactions that are just supposed to work out for us. And it's easy to see that as strength, right? I'm gaining, I'm progressing, I'm making the hard calls, I'm doing these great things, but it's actually weakness. It's weakness because we can't see past ourselves. It's weakness because we aren't seeing people as they really are and valuing them as people the way that God does. So we actually hurt people and can hurt people deeply out of our weakness. And we don't always see it. And that weakness comes from our sin. So our sin makes us weak because we don't see what's happening around us. Sin also weakens our connection with God. John 15, 5 and 6, it's pretty cool. Kevin actually quoted this verse. I didn't know he was going to do it, but it's the vine and the branches verse. 5 and 6, I'm the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that's thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. We need a strong connection to the vine. We need to stay connected to the vine, and that vine is Jesus. Sin pulls us from the vine. Sin rejects the vine and wants to sever us from it. When the connection to the vine weakens, we weaken. Our strength comes from our connection to Jesus, and our weakness comes from the weakness of our connection. Right? We all know about slow connections, whether it's internet, cell phone, any of that, right? Nobody likes slow speeds, right? They don't want to slow upload or download, right? My TikTok needs to upload faster. My tweets need to download and refresh faster. We want a strong connection. But our upload speed to God and our download speed of his words are a whole lot slower when our connection with him is weakened. We don't pray, it's our upload. We don't listen, it's the download, very much at all. When our connection with God is weakened, our true sense of strength is weakened. Our sense of peace is weakened. Our sense of guidance is weakened. We're weaker when we're not connected with God. And that's not great. But thankfully, the weakness doesn't have to last forever. That connection isn't down forever. And Samson actually experiences that at the end of our story. We're going to read Judges 16, 23 through 30. Now the rulers of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and celebrate, saying, "Our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hands." When the people saw him, they praised God, saying, "Our God has delivered our enemy into our hands, the one who laid waste our land and multiplied our slain." While they were in high spirits, they shouted, "Bring out Samson to entertain us." So they called Samson out of the prison he performed for them. When they stood him among the pillars, Samson said to the servant who held his hand, "Put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple so that I may lean against them." Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there. And on the roof were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. Then Samson prayed to the Lord, "Sovereign Lord, remember me. Please, God, strengthen me just once more and let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes." Then Samson reached toward the two central pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against them, his right hand on the one, his left on the other. Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." Then he pushed with all his might, came down, down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than when he lived. So Samson is still in prison, and the Philistines are holding what's basically a Thanksgiving festival to their god Dagon, probably the god of a corn or vegetation or harvest god. And the belief was that Dagon delivered Samson to the Philistines, when in reality, Samson's sin and his disregard for God led to his demise. Now, these festivals were known to have a lot of wine, usually turned into some form of general debauchery. When it said they were in high spirits, it's mean they were really, really drunk. And this one takes a different turn. They want to bring Samson out so that he might perform for them. Think of a strong man at a circus. They want to bring him out, but they want to laugh at him and chide him and belittle him. And Samson then asks to be put where he can feel the pillars to the side. Remember, he's blind. His eyes are gouged out. And then he prays one more time. He prays. He says, he comes back to God and he pleads with God, "Remember me one more time. Give me strength one more time." And God does. God comes back to him one more time. Samson puts one hand on each pillar and he pushes with all of his strength. And with the strength of God, the temple collapses. killing many of the Philistines, killing Samson himself. This killed many more than any of Samson's other exploits. He killed the most in his death. God still used Samson after all he had done because Samson reconnected with God. Samson reconnected with God. I have two young kids, and I have tried and had to try to reconnect many pieces of toys over the years. If you know kids or have kids, toys break all the time. I have tried to reconnect them using just about everything. I've used tape, hot glue, duct tape, super glue, thumbtacks, binder clips, rope, you name it. I have tried to use it all because the kid response is, oh, we'll just fix it, just put it back together. It's like, that doesn't always work. But we try. We try to reconnect. Sin weakens and breaks our connection with God, so we need to try and reconnect it. The cool thing is, there are a variety of ways to reconnect with God, so I want to highlight a few of those. The first one is, we talked about how sin leads to our weakness. Reconnecting with God can be done by seeing our weakness. And our weakness, it's not fun to admit or to see in ourselves, but acknowledging our weakness is the first step to getting stronger with God, right? To acknowledge a weakness. If I want to acknowledge that my quads are weak, then I go and decide to do a whole bunch of squats to make them stronger. We acknowledge the weakness first. God recognizes our weakness, and he loves them. He loves us in our weakness. So talk to God about your weakness. Admit your weakness to God. Ignoring it doesn't make it better. So talk to God about it, and then take action with God. The strength of God comes with training with God. We don't have to get stronger to then go back to God. We can get stronger with God. And it takes listening and acting, and sometimes not acting, based on what God is saying. He might say, don't go to that place. Say no to that person. Or invite that person. Get away from the computer. Go back to the small group. Make something. Don't take something. Whatever it is, to listen and work with God. Work through our weaknesses with God. With him, we have a way out of the sin that makes us weak. We just have to see it and take it, and that's a step to reconnecting with God. But it starts with seeing our weakness and using that as a way to reconnect with God. We also want to see how we've lost our way. We talked about losing our way, but see how that's happened. If you feel like you've lost your way, take a look. Look back and see how that may have happened. Was it a one-event type of thing? There was a catastrophe, a trauma, a moral failure, something somebody did or said, a screw-up, something. Sometimes it's just that one big event that really takes you away. Or could it be a series of events? This is the one I resonate, right? In the past, for me, it's gone like this. One extra drink here, two or three snide comments there, a dash of impurity, will garnish it with some sprigs of arrogance, and there's my recipe for losing my way. Been there, done that, got the t-shirt, okay? However, we've lost our way, that feeling, and I know it can be very isolating and lonely. Right when we're lost, we don't know where we are. We're trying to figure out how to get back. We just need somebody to be with us. The way back and the person to be with is God. Knowing that and seeing that is actually a step to reconnecting with him. So we see our weakness. We see how we've lost our way. And there's one more that struck me that we'll wrap up with today, and that's to reconnect with the cross. So I want you to be honest with yourself now. If you are in a place where you've lost your way, or if you are aware of weakness and sin, I am not here to shame, judge, or guilt you back to Jesus. I don't believe in that at all. But I am here to ask you and encourage you to reconnect with the cross to get back to Jesus. We'll help address the weakness and get you back to God's way and reconnect with him. And the cross can bring up a variety of ideas and themes, right? Forgiveness. God isn't holding our sin against us. Grace. God is moving, right, and giving me another chance to go with him. God's giving me a do-over. He knows I'm prone to weakness and to wander. We sang that in that song this morning, prone to wander. God, I feel it. But he lets us come back. So forgiveness and grace are incredible things to think about with the cross, and they're amazing gifts we need to receive with a heart of gratitude. But one more that I came up with that I thought about that hit me this week and I really like is to connect and reconnect with the sacrificial love that the cross represents. Sacrificial love brings me all the way back to God because sacrificial love pulls me all the way back because I can have something to sit in, to rest in, and to just take a breath in because it's the love of a God who wants to be with me in my weakness and my loneliness when I don't want to be with myself and I'm pretty sure nobody else does. It's the love of a God who says, I forgive you and you have another shot. I still love you and want you as my own and I sent my son to die to show you that. So reconnect with the cross, reconnect with God's sacrificial love, and reconnect with God. When we reconnect with God, he will continue to make a way even when we lose our own way. Let's pray. God, I thank you for this morning. I thank you for the story of Samson, God, and that Samson reconnected with you, God, and that we are able to reconnect with you. So I pray that, God, if we've lost our way, if we're feeling like we're in some weakness with our sin, whatever it is, God, that we would right now be reconnecting with you as we're coming to a time where we'll remember the cross and we'll take communion, that we would reconnect with you, God, and we would see that you're still there in our lives and you're still there to guide us. So, God, I thank you that you will continue to make a way for us, whether we lose ours or we're weak in ours, God, then we can always reconnect with you. Praise in your name. Amen.